While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Tuesday, the 7th of April, 2026. Now, as the country settles back into its normal rhythm following the Easter weekend, many Namibians are now fully re-engaging with work, school, and business. Now, the long weekend offered a valuable pause, a time for reflection, connection, and spiritual renewal. But today marks a clear return to the pace of everyday life. Now across the country, from Windhoek to Walvis Bay, Oshakati to Kempmanshoop, the post-holiday reset is in full swing. Roads are quieter again after the holiday traffic surge. Offices are open, classrooms are active, and the national focus shifts back to productivity and progress. But while the holiday may be over, the conversation it sparked and the impact it left behind are still very much relevant. Now today's program, we take a look, close look at how Easter period influenced travel, local commerce, and community life. Did businesses see the boost they were hoping for? What trends are emerging as consumers readjust after the long weekend? And what lessons can be drawn as Namibia continues to navigate a changing economic landscape? We'll turn our attention to broader national issues, from economic resilience and policy direction to innovation and opportunities shaping the future for young Namibians. Because even as routines resume, the bigger picture continues to evolve. And of course, we reflect on one of the most important aspects of any holiday, that is safety. The Easter weekend often brings increased movement on our roads, and with that comes responsibility. Let's unpack what this period has revealed about road safety, public awareness, and the ongoing need for caution and accountability. Now, as always, On the Radar is about more than just headlines. It is about understanding the connections, how decisions in leadership spaces translate into real life experiences for individuals, families, and communities across Namibia. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, expect sharp analysis, grounded conversations, and insights that matter. Whether you're easing back into your workday or staying informed on the go, this is your space. This is On the Radar on Eagle FM Namibia, not just reporting the news, but making sense of it all. Now, let's get right into today's conversation. Namibia today joins the global community in commemorating World Health Day, observed annually on the 7th of April to mark the founding of the World Health Organization in 1948. Now in Windhoek, the day was marked by a vibrant and symbolic march led by officials from the Ministry of Health and Social Services, accompanied by the Namibian Police Band. Now the procession moved through Katutura, one of the country's most historically significant and densely populated communities, drawing participation from residents, health workers, and community stakeholders. Now the march began at Goriakab Fourway and made its way to Okapale, where the official commemoration took place. Community members joined in numbers, turning the event into more than just a formal observance, but a collective expression of awareness, solidarity, and commitment to health and well-being. Now at the heart of today's commemoration is a powerful and often overlooked definition. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Now, this definition, set by the World Health Organization, challenges both policymakers and citizens to rethink how health is understood and addressed. It shifts the focus beyond hospitals and treatment toward prevention, mental wellness, social conditions, and quality of life. In a country like Namibia, where both communicable and non-communicable diseases remain pressing concerns, this broader perspective is especially relevant. Now, of course, today's engagement with the health practitioners comes at a critical moment for Namibia's healthcare system. Over the years, Namibia has made notable progress in expanding healthcare access and improving outcomes. However, significant challenges still do remain. A dual healthcare system exists where the majority depend on public services, often under pressure. Diseases such as HIV and AIDS continue to impact life expectancy. Non-communicable diseases like hypertension, diabetes, and obesity are on the rise. Access to specialized care remains limited for many citizens. Now, this reality underscores the importance of events like today's, not just a celebration, but as platforms for honest reflection and renewed commitment. Hence why today we will be engaging healthcare practitioners to talk about Namibia's health state in general. How are we faring and where do improvements need to be made? Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace as we get hold of Nurse Helena Tangish weather for us to get into that discussion. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now joining us in studio telephonically is registered nurse Helena Tangishi-Weather. She's also the founder of Hope Community Clinic. A very good afternoon to you, Helena, and welcome to On The Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon to you, Kathy, and thank you for having me.
Pleasure is all mine. Now, Helena, of course, today we celebrate World Health Day, a day that is set apart to recognize also World Health Organization. You see, now I'm mixing the two. World Health Day, observed annually on the 7th of April to mark the founding of the World Health Organization. Now, apart from that, the Ministry of Health and Social Services decided to celebrate this day as well with the Namibian people. But let's talk in general about the state of health within Namibia, underscoring the definition of health by the World Health Organization.
Thank you very much. Today, as we mark the World Health Day, we are reminded that health is not just the absence of diseases, but a state of complete physical, mental, and social being.
Mm-hmm.
And in here, as you have mentioned, this is very important because while we have made progress, we still have many challenges that we need to face together. But as well, we also have come so far and we have beautiful milestones that as Namibia nation, we have as well achieved. And just to start with, there is also the march that happened today that was organized by the Ministry of Health and Social Services. That is just to create awareness as well as to promote health for all.
Interesting. And I think I find it quite interesting that the march proceeded from Horiakhap Fourway to Okapale for those obviously in the community to be able to come and see the officials, people from the Ministry of Health themselves. But I can't help to notice sanitation, the lack of sanitation within the area. Yes, business people or vendors were by the street. Helena, still, when we talk about the World Health Organization definition of health being a state of complete well-being, not merely the absence of disease, like you also rightly quoted,
How perhaps now can we shift from just trying to attend perhaps to disease and also rather attend to other social aspects that incorporate health?
Like I've said, Namibia has done so well in improving access to health, and we've made a very strong progress in areas like treatment of communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases. But however, like I said, we still face challenges that we need to overcome as a nation and as a community together. And this is whereby we need to start by addressing the challenges, especially that are faced by people that are living either in rural areas or that are living in areas such as Kore Hub Dam, where then the Vedas also live. So we need them to maybe invest more in campaigning that can lift our health and also teach our people on sanitation, on health, general health hygiene, on from person to person, and as well how to handle these day-to-day vendors and everything.
Indeed. Now let's talk about some of the advancement made by the Ministry of Health and Social Services this year. Practically, we have seen this year how Mahwilili Clinic became operational 24 hours, and I think in a space of less than a month or just less than 2 months, let's to be on the safe side, Okulyangava Clinic also got turned into a 24-hour operational clinic. And on top of that, also let's reflect as well on the hot water that was instilled at Central Hospital. But although I have questions regarding hot water at Cathedral Hospital, but what do some of this changes, what do they signify about perhaps where we are going in terms of health?
This is all the achievements that the Namibian state or government has so far achieved. It signify or it is showing that we are on a good track when it's coming to health. Improvements are coming, improvements of the infrastructure, and improvement or the implementation of hot water at Central Hospitals, and also the idea, if I quote the Ministry of Health correctly, is to say that we want to decentralize our health. That is so that every Namibian person is able to be able to get access to health timely and quality health as well. Therefore, I can say that without doubt that where we are now, we are heading on a good note when it's coming to health. And also just the launch of the phase one of health care for all that was launched by the government of Namibia. That is another commendable achievement that our government so far have achieved.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And now let's hear from you, being the founder of Hope Community Clinic. Am I saying it in the right order, Helena?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yes. Being the founder of Hope Community Clinic, SNS, which is kind of like out of the norm, because we normally hear a doctor's practice as opposed to a nurse practice. What do you say about this in terms of one trying to pursue and achieve their dreams as a health practitioner? Perhaps one has bigger dreams that they want to achieve, but they feel a little bit limited, maybe because of title or whatsoever. What do you say about that?
I like to say that every healthcare professional healthcare professional. When you're a healthcare professional, then that is a calling, that is your passion. And I like to say that each an individual has their own calling. And if you are a doctor, then serve as a doctor. If you are a nurse, then serve as a nurse. If you are a psychologist, serve as a psychologist. The purpose is to serve the community and give them the best we can and save lives as well, promote health, and just ensure that every person get access to health, and no one should be excluded from the quality, dignified, and non-judgmental health that our nation deserves.
Mm-hmm. Let's speak to us, the public in general, in terms of what is it as a nurse, a registered nurse, and of course, as a nurse practitioner, what is it that you want us to take ownership of when it comes to our own health?
There's a quote that I like that says that a strong nation is a healthy nation is a strong nation, and it is not just the government responsibility to ensure that every person is accessible to health, but it is also our responsibilities as individuals, as community, to ensure that we play our role in ensuring that we are living healthy lifestyles, and then we are doing our general checkup as we're supposed to do them, and then we then as team can then meet, and then halfway then we can be a healthier nation.
Indeed. And also in terms of playing our part, also when it comes to sanitation, I think there we also need to take ownership of it ourselves, because I don't think we should expect also, yes, the government has its part to play, its role to play, I acknowledge that, but I also know that we as individuals have our part to play. I personally see this because I've visited some rural, not necessarily rural areas, but I've visited areas here in Windhoek where you get informal settlement. Let me talk about informal settlements. With some informal settlements, you see hygiene and how they really conduct themselves. Let me be more specific to say some particular part of what Chomwe say. I don't know. I don't want to generalize and say the whole of it. Yeah, but I've seen clean areas in Chomwe say, and then I've seen very unhygienic areas in the Havana community, for instance. So how should we Namibians really take ownership of sanitation to also prevent communicable diseases or non-communicable diseases?
Yeah, like I said, health is not just the government's responsibility. It is all of us. So that is from how we eat, from how we support each other emotionally, and from how we seek help, from how we take care of where we live, or from how we take care of ourselves as individuals. Therefore, for as much as the government have the responsibility to ensure that they build the infrastructures, they provide enough equipment and medicine, then as individuals as well, we have a very big role to play to ensure that the environment where we live, we have taken care of it. And then also from the government side has also a role to ensure that the employers that are responsible to clean or to build sanitaries that is, can be toilets, or providing clean water to the community is as well done. So like I said, it is everyone's individual as a community as whole, and as well as the government, then together we can build a healthier community and environment as well.
I hear you. Neselena Tangishiweather, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. And we wish you all the best with your work, even as a healthcare practitioner, and happy World Health Day.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much for the listeners as well. I wish everyone a World Health Day, and let us move and let us do all we can. We are able to do to live a healthy lifestyle. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Thank you, Helena. Okay.
And there we had it from a nurse practitioner, Helena Tangishiweather. And of course, we're talking about health not being merely the absence of diseases, as health goes beyond that. Now, at the heart of today's commemoration is also a powerful and often overlooked definition, which I have spoken of earlier. Now, today's engagement with health practitioners also comes at the critical moment for Namibia's healthcare systems, and the march through Katutura carries deep symbolic meaning. Although sometimes the community wants more practical, hands on solutions, but it's through those marches, for instance, it's through officials going to them or closer to them that they observe and see things that need to be implemented and need to be put in place that then also brings changes. Now, Katutura is not just a location. It represents also history and the lived experiences of many Namibians. Bringing World Health Day into the streets rather than confining it to conference rooms reinforces a key message. Health is a shared responsibility. It belongs to individuals making daily lifestyle choices, communities supporting one another, government shaping policy and infrastructure, health professionals delivering care and guidance. So we need to move away from awareness to action. And today's program also creates space for dialogue, engaging health practitioners on the realities facing Namibia's healthcare system in light of the World Health definition of health. Also at Okapale, where some mobile clinics, I tend to believe that probably for if the community wants to make use of them. Now, key questions also shaping the conversation include, are we doing enough to address mental health and social well-being? How can healthcare become more accessible and equitable? But with that, we'll get into it with Dr. Kamtufe. But before we get to him, let's listen to one of the residents of Goriachab Dam, who I got to engage with at the celebration of World Health Day today at Okapale. Let's hear from him.
Very good afternoon to you, sir. Please kindly introduce yourself and tell us how do you feel about the Ministry of Health coming to celebrate World Health Day right here at Goriachab?
Really appreciate for the Minister of Health for doing this, because and look, we are far. We are like, we don't feel like we are in window. But they did a very good thing to come to us, educate us, knowing that seriously education needed. Health is the first before you leave. And what I want you to tell you is this. Goriachab is big. Mm-hmm. It's very big enough. A lot of people. Some people, they are very crime. They commit crime because of it. They know. But the Ministry of Health is doing a very good thing for them. But we appreciate what they are doing for now.
Mm-hmm. In terms of sanitation and health, what do you want the Ministry of Health and Social Services to do for residents in Goriachab?
Well, the Ministry of Health, they have done, as you can see, sanitation has been implemented. I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or 4 years ago. But yet, we are not yet enough. And as you can see, we are a lot. But there's nothing we can do. Whatever the government budgeted for us, we appreciate. We need more. As more people are flowing to urban area.
Okay.
And there's nothing that we can do.
And your message to the Namibian people out there, what they should remember?
My message to this World Day, Mr. Emmanuel Evaristos, everybody knows. If you are on a medication of HIV, please don't skip. Neither 1 month, neither 2 months. Try to follow what you are doing to make it easy for the doctor. Because now things become very worse. If you are under antibiotic and you skip or you stop, remember the whole system of your body, it's incomplete. So then it's going to make things very difficult for a doctor to make sure exactly what exactly to give you. But once you are in correct way, and the things, guys, these things, we flow and we make Namibia healthy. As you are speaking to you, Emmanuel Evaristos, down there is my house. Wonderful. We are all healthy. And I appreciate that
our government, our beautiful government that we have, we need more leader like the new leader that we have, and the new leader of the health, and this is Namibia that we have, and it's all what we have, and we will never lose it anymore. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
We had it from Mr. Evaristus, a resident of Horia Hub, speaking about sanitation and how the Ministry of Health has constructed some sanitation centers there. And of course, also urging them that the a lot, Horia Hub is quite a lot. And there's a lot of people, also influx of people coming from rural areas most of the time, or in other times, let me not say most of the time, but in other times they come and stay in informal settlements or informal communities. Hence why this needs to also speed up sanitation implementations at those areas. As you had, he noted that this was about 2-3 years ago when the sanitation center was constructed or put up by the ministry at Horia Hub. Nonetheless, of course, it is World Health Day. Call in on studio and share with us what does the reminds you of, and what message do you have to share with the rest of the Namibian people in terms of health, and how can we take ownership of our own health? Nonetheless, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. To stay tuned, we still have more coming your way.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimi with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and of course, joining us telephonically now from Tanzania is Dr. Kamtufe Oscar Johannes. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon and good afternoon to our listeners. Thank you for having me on this important day.
Pleasure is all ours, Doctor. Of course, we're talking about Health Key in Namibia, or celebrating World Health Day, and also incorporating the definition of it, of health being a state of well-being, incorporating mental health as well, and not merely the absence of diseases. Now, let me ask you, being a doctor and having been, of course, here, even though now you're in Tanzania, just what do you think about Namibia's health overall? How are we faring in health?
In general, I can say Namibia is progressing well. Mm-hmm. Even though the ministry is facing some challenges, but it's doing very well. Significantly progress in areas such as HIV care, maternal health, vaccination program, and also access to ALT. Mm-hmm. These are important achievements that continue to improve the life expectancy and quality of life for many of our people in Namibia.
Mm. And also now, in terms of accessing healthcare, would you say that a lot of Namibians have the opportunity to access healthcare? Of course, we have public hospitals, or what we call state hospitals, which I wouldn't want to really make comparison to other countries, but if need be, please do go ahead and do so.
Yes, I can say everyone is access to health care, but it's not really like the same with other country. For instance, I can just compare Namibia with your immediate neighbor there, like Zambia.
Mm.
You see, when it's coming to health system of Zambia, they decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they are doing their things regarding the health, they even set up hospital into grades. Like they have level one, they have general hospital, and then they have referral hospital. But when it's coming to Namibia, we mostly have a primary health care, and then from primary to referral.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's coming to referral hospital in Namibia, so far we only have one, which is referral hospital.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest hospital in Namibia, which is central.
Mm-hmm.
So there we really need to do a lot. I feel like we need to decentralize. We need to have lots of referral hospital.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. We still have, and I don't want to overlook the fact that we still have a lot of patients being referred, coming to the referral hospital, as far as from Kathmandu, as far as Oshakati, as far as Rundu as well. And sometimes this particular patient is being referred to Central Hospital or Katutura Hospital for the mere fact because there is no particular machinery that they need, that needs to test them, you know? Let's say, for instance, how perhaps then can we cut down on this? Because we need to consider there is transport involved in that. And also, when a patient comes from Kathmandu, for instance, they have to take a bed space in Katutura Hospital, for instance. How can we perhaps now focus on making our hospitals, bringing them to the state where they ought to be by really upgrading them and doing and enhancing them so that they can give quality health services? Sorry.
For me, when it's coming to that, I don't think we need to be referring all patients, let me say all patients, to Central or Katutura Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe I have 14 regions. I feel like we need to have, in all 14 regions, we need to upgrade some hospital to become referral from the primary health center. Because at the end of the day, imagine if you have a patient who is coming from Rudret to Central, or maybe Katima to Central. And from Katima, that is over 1,000 kilometers. By the time the patient is going to reach Central, the person is already tired, and I feel like we need to upgrade. Because the thing is, we already have hospital in those regions.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do, we don't need to build new hospital. We just need to upgrade some of them to become bigger hospital in the regions.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. And of course, now that Makhwilili Clinic and Okuliangava Clinic have been turned into 24 hours operational centers now, what do you make of that? And perhaps do you think that we need to do same for other clinics that are not necessarily in the capital city? Of course, giving applaud to the Ministry of Health in this particular aspect as well.
That is a good progress from the ministry. Like, if you look at the population of Windhoek itself, we have lots of majority of people there in Windhoek. So it's good that those two clinics are operating now 24/7. Because back in those past years, the people used just to go to either there was what blockchain. And if it is not blockchain, you just have to go straight to Katutura, which sometimes make it very difficult for healthcare workers, because by the time you are going to reach Katutura, you will find another patient already there. Mm. But if there are this small healthcare that are operating 24/7, one can go to Makhwiriri before they get referred to Katutula or Central, which is helping anyway, because it's decongesting Katutula and Central.
And I
think the ministry should also do the same with other regions, because this is not just needed in Windhoek or Comas region. It's also needed in other regions.
Correct. I can go with you on that. Now, of course, you are a pediatrician's resident in Tanzania, doing your residency in Tanzania, right? Are you back home?
Yes. No, I'm in Tanzania.
Okay. In terms of pediatric doctors, I think also the number is quite scarce of those who are specialized in pediatrics and all that. How do we then curb, you know, the number of many pediatric doctors we being worn out, you see? For instance, I mean, how do we bring more pediatric doctors on board? And I think in terms of encouraging people to take medicine or to do medicine has been there for a very long time, but then you still get doctors who are very much overworked.
You see, children are the future of all nations. Let me say globally. When you have healthy children, they grow into they grow into healthy community, and it's become a strong nation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at specialists, when it's coming to PEDS, so far I don't think we have lots of specialists in Namibia that have done PEDS.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ministry needs to do more, not just when it's coming to PEDS. I think the ministry needs to send lots of people to go for specialization course. Yes, I know that we now have lots of general we now need to focus on specialization course.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I concur with you on that one. I remember some few years ago when a specialized doctor was coming to Angela State Hospital, as in the north at the time, and my son had an infection in his arm, and so we had to wait for that particular doctor who couldn't actually speak English, so somebody had to translate for him, explain to him, and then he gives feedback on how the particular child should be treated. And it really shows that we need more specialized doctors. Yes, perhaps the number for general practitioners has increased, but yeah, do you think it's perhaps maybe medical practitioners themselves who are not specializing, or that we need more people or more stakeholders to come on board and assist in them specializing, or where is the issue?
You see, the issue is coming in whereby, like, when someone becomes a medical doctor, it's become very difficult for someone to go for a specialization course, because one have to resign, and it's not an easy thing, because you look at the course that you are going to cover during your study. But if the ministry is going to send people on things that they are doing, like recently they've sent students that are on their scholarship doing dental, whatever. If they are to do the same thing with medical doctor, I don't think it will be an issue. Everyone wants to become specialists. At the end of the day, Namibia will have lots of specializations.
Interesting. Yeah. Yes. And then we don't really have to source from outside. I'm not saying we shouldn't accommodate them, but then we also need to have a strong local economy.
Yes.
Now, doctor, what's your message to the Namibian people out there in terms of World Health Day? What is it that you would want Namibians to remember on this particular day?
On this World Day, I would like just to encourage every Namibia to take their health seriously. They must be always do regular medical checkup, healthy eating, exercising, good hygiene, mental wellness, and seeking medical care early when unwell. Because this is an essential step in preventing complications. Because you see, all other diseases, if you happen to go to the hospital early, it makes work for doctors or all healthy cares become very easy. But if you go at the late stage, it comes with lots of complication.
I hear you.
Yes.
Doctor, thank you so
much. So health is wealthy, and a healthy population is the foundation of national development. Let's all work together to build a healthier Namibia.
Okay. Indeed. Doctor, thank you so much for making time for us, and we wish you all the very best in your studies. And yeah, we hope for you to come back soon, and of course, so we can benefit from you.
Thank you very much. I will be back soon.
Okay. And then we had it from Dr. Kamtufe, Oscar Johannes, speaking to us also in terms of World Health Day on this particular day, and reflecting also, and indeed he speaks about we need to do our part in terms of exercising. Are you exercising? Are you drinking enough water? That question comes to you and to me. Nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is On The Reader News Analysis. We make room for a scheduled commercial break. Please stay tuned. We have more coming your way.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Easter's cheaper with extra low prices at Furman Brock. Get 2 kg Tastic Rice for $36.99. A 2 litre Coca-Cola for only $21.99. 2 kg Sunlight Hand or Auto Washing Powder for $54.99. And 9 Twin Saver 2-ply Toilet Rolls for only $69.99. Hop on over to furmanbrock.com to see more Easter bargains at WB. We care.
Always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Meanwhile, Communications, Health, Promotion and Social Determinants Officer at the World Health Organization, Cecilia Kaunachike, spoke to us during the celebration of World Health Day, where she quoted the theme of this year, Together for Health, Stained with Science. And she noted that science can be trusted and that many advances made in health now are as a result of science, giving examples of vaccines. Let's take a listen to her.
So we are here at Okapale with Celia. Celia, please kindly tell us what's the purpose of us being here, for you being a from the World Health Organization.
Thank you for having me. My name is Celia Kaunachike, as the Communications and Health Promotion Officer. We are here because today we are celebrating the founding of WHO, actually. Today, I think over 70 years, the constitution of WHO was found. And the theme for this year, we are amplifying that science can be trusted, and that most of the solutions that we have in health today were because of science, things like vaccines, the reduction of maternal and childhood mortality, the reduction of nutrition is because of scientific evidence that we turn into practical solutions, into policies, into community, into commitments, and also through engagement of our leaders and communities. Uh-huh. So we are here to celebrate the founding of WHO, uh-huh, the Ministry of Health and other partners.
Uh-huh. Now we know that the definition of health by the World Health Organization is that it's a complete of well-being and not just merely the absence of diseases. Now we are at Okapale, where we see obviously uncleanness and high unhygieneness also in this surrounding area. How do you think perhaps moving forward the World Health Organization tends to play its part in ensuring that inequality is reduced?
Yeah, one of the core mandates of the WHO is really to advance health for all, which is universal health coverage. Maybe some people are familiar with that term. So in partnership with the Ministry of Health, we've been working together to look at policies, to look at services, to make sure that every Namibian, irrespective of where they are, have access to quality care. And also that's why we brought this event here, and we're celebrating health. And we know that where are the people that can actually understand that they matter and their health matter to the government, to us as the WHO. So that's why we brought it here, and definitely going forward, we'll continue our partnership with the Ministry of Health in advancing health.
Uh-huh. Last question. In terms of funding having been cut by obviously President Donald Trump, how do you think non-governmental institutions are progressing, especially those ones who are catering for health? And maybe what is your message towards them? Perhaps to try to be a little bit more independent in case such future things also happen, such things happen in the future.
I think for sustainability, partnership is very key. Partnership not only with government, but also partnership with communities. Because the solutions lie within our communities. And then if we use the resources that we have at our disposal, looking at maybe the leadership in our communities, we can, you know, some of the NGOs can still do the things that are restricted with community engagement in terms of advancing health at the community level. But definitely partnership is key when resources are few.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And there we had it. Now we invite you to partake in this news. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. That is 083-288-401. For now, let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with economic indicators and news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura mengelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondutu toingida ashike kapeno nwe utete opoye ekukurile Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamweli nawa Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile konderewa, bra hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now let's get into economic indicators. We start off with the US dollar in comparison to the Namibian dollar, which is 16.90 Namibian dollars, one US dollar being 16 Namibian dollars point 90 cents, and 1 euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars point 52 cents, and 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars point 39 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 60 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 72 cents. 1 Japanese yen is equals to 0.11 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars, 0.46 cents. And 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 24 cents. And now let's move on to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, South Africa had recorded over the Easter weekend an interception of a vehicle that had undocumented Zimbabwean nationals. Now, today, the report on undocumented Zimbabwean nationals set to appear in court today.
Border Management Authority Commissioner Dr. Michael Masiapato says the driver of a bus that was transporting undocumented Zimbabwean nationals should be found and charged with aiding and abetting illegal immigrants. This as 16 undocumented Zimbabwean nationals are expected to appear in the Bloemfontein Magistrates Court today. They were arrested during a roadblock on Thursday night on the N1 near Bloemfontein. Their bus was traveling from Zimbabwe to Cape Town. Free State Police spokesperson Thabo Kobane says that a case docket of the Contravention of Immigration Act was opened.
On Thursday, the 2nd of April 2026, 16 foreign nationals, of which 5 were males and 11 females, were arrested during a Safer Easter Holidays roadblock on N1 National Road in Tlen Police Station Precinct. 12 minors were also in the company of their mothers. All arrested persons are Zimbabwean nationals. A case docket of Contravention of Immigration Act was opened and the persons were detained. The minors were placed under the care of designated social workers. The arrested males and females will appear in Bloemfontein Magistrate Court on Tuesday, the 6th of April 2026. The court will determine the fine amounts to be paid or period of sentence. Those who can afford to pay the determined fine amounts will be handed over to immigration officers. They will then be detained further, awaiting deportation process. When the approval is received, they will then be transferred to Lindela, where they will be officially deported to their homeland. Those who cannot afford to pay the fine amounts will serve the sentence period in prison. Parents of the minors are deported directly to their homelands.
Meanwhile, South Africa's cost of living brought to light.
As Easter travelers return home, the reality of everyday costs
continue to hit. From food and transport to electricity, many households say prices remain too high. The Competition Commission's latest cost of living report tracks prices since 2020, and the message is clear. Pressure on consumers' budgets is far from over. For low-income households, most of their money is already spoken for. More than two-thirds of income goes to basics like food, housing, transport, and utilities. Families say careful planning has become a way of life. Traveling from Hamapale in Lesotho back to Mobopane in Pretoria, one household says every trip now requires careful planning.
First thing is first, we wrote everything down, so we just included the money for transport. So food, we didn't use a lot of money for food, because when we get there, they have accompanied us, yeah, with everything. So yeah, we saw everything, like, oh, the price am going up ever since, like, even the money of petrol, yeah, everything now is expensive.
Others say supporting family amid the rising costs has become even more difficult.
Ke nna motho le rong anje ke rata gore le ke ke nya gore family ya ke e be right anje ke every month ke dira something ke nana na le family ya gore kwa pele kwa ka ba kala re since le petrol le dura transport ya godimo me ka sho re nna ya ka family e ba sharp a re tlhakane le mathata.
But it's not just the basics. The report shows the cost of a decent life is also going up. Healthcare costs like visiting a doctor are rising faster than inflation. And education is becoming more expensive, with school fees coming well above inflation. The interest rate landscape is also having an impact on those with credit. For homeowners, higher interest rates are adding pressure by pushing up monthly bond repayments. Renters may see some stability, but overall housing costs remain high. One owner says it's difficult to remain on top of the cost of living with stagnant salaries.
We are not managing at all, my sister. We are not remade, if I can be honest with you. Even if you can see on the street, like, there's no one. You can go to any restaurant, like, there's no one.
He says policymakers and industries of the South African economy should intervene to ensure households remain above water and can continue spending to grow the economy.
This economy, this Cyril Ramaphosa economy, you can't budget. Like, there's nothing you can budget. Minister Liena, akafukota, the price study you do. But then it's impossible because of what is going on. So it's a burden. It's a burden for, I can imagine for us, who people who are working, it's a challenge. So for someone
care that helps you care for others, that's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
And now moving on to Zambia. Zambia's economy is set to be rising, but yet people are still struggling. Let's take a listen.
Economists in Zambia say the country is witnessing macroeconomic stability. This means the country can maintain sustainable growth and is not easily shaken by international market volatilities. Now, key indicators such as inflation, employment, and the prices of key goods and services have also seen relative stability. President Hakainde Hichilema is even more confident that his government intends to double the growth rate. Amid all this positiveness, critics have downplayed the progress, associating it with what they call election year fake economic recovery. What really is the case? And how can this growth, whether fluke or not, be sustained? Joining us to break this down, we have Dr. Oswald Mongole. He's president of the Economics Association of Zambia, as well as DW's Katie Short in Lusaka. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Oswald, sets the pace for us for this conversation. When we say the Zambian economy is seeing a strong growth outlook, what exactly do we mean?
Thank you so much. First of all, what economic outlook implies, or positive economic outlook implies, is that we have the macroeconomic environment, which is stable in the country. From that, we expect that the economy will be picking up and getting to higher heights in terms of now achieving what the country wants to achieve. For instance, the country wants now to achieve a more rapid economic growth rate. Then with the macro, or with a stable macroeconomic environment, that will be then highly possible. It means that there is stability in the macro environment, from the exchange rate side, from the interest rates, from inflation, and also from the fiscal side of it. So we are saying that that is positive.
What we are seeing is that there's a projection that the current gross domestic products, that's the GDP rate, is projected to rise by 6.4%. What is the situation at the moment, and what does this projection mean for not just the economy, but the people that live in it?
Thank you. Zambia's projected 6.4% GDP growth for 2026 is grounded on structural recovery across the three key sectors: mining sector, agriculture sector, ICT, and the fourth one will be the energy supply. So that's the basis for us to project the 6.4%. Now, from the mining side, we are saying government's projections show strong performance in mining, supported by expansion at major operations and a stable regulatory regime. Mining alone is expected to lift national output significantly. From the agricultural sector, we're expecting an agricultural rebound. In terms, maize production is projected to exceed 3.7 million metric tons. And this will be driven by improved irrigation, climate adaptation, and better input distribution. This recovery reduces inflationary pressures and supports food security.
I am curious, right, as a lay person, as the ordinary Zambian who sells tomatoes in the market, who, you know, is doing their carpentry business, how does this relate to me?
Yeah, that is a very important message to the person on the street, the ordinary Zambians. We are seeing this macroeconomic stabilization and positive projections in terms of economic performance. But what we are seeing is that nearly 60% of the Zambians still live in poverty. Therefore, economic growth alone is insufficient. Zambia needs inclusive, rural-focused human development policies. So we need some interventions. For instance, the person on the street will need support from the irrigation kind of projects so that they can be able to grow their products. They can be food sufficient throughout the year. They also need support in terms of other climate-smart agriculture. You know, in Zambia, most people, the largest part of the population, lives in the rural areas. They also need the extension services and also livestock value chains. Social protection scaling is also important for the person on the street. Social protection implies that you don't just depend on the statistics, the figures that we are getting. What is important is what goes into the pocket of a person, of an individual person. So that's what social protection implies. They should be having income that is that should be able to sustain their living conditions throughout the year, and therefore government needs projects and programs that would support people so that the poverty levels are cushioned and that everyone else is better off.
All right. Doc, I'm going to come back to you, but Kathy, from the ground, you speak to people a lot, you interact with, you know, citizens a lot. What are they saying about the seeming strong economic outlook and the reflections in their daily livelihood?
Okay, so it's been a rough few years in terms of the economy. So there's the sense of relief for most people on the ground that I've been speaking to. Of course, also the ruling party, the United Party for National Development, is very excited about this, with the president and all the officials talking very highly about this achievement. And also even some local Zambians are telling me that sometimes in the pharmacies, some medicines have gone down, the prices of medicines, some prices in terms of local commodities. But some of the people are really skeptical. It's a mixed reaction, so to speak. There are some people that are saying that, for instance, they went into the shop maybe about 2 weeks ago to buy sugar at maybe 54 kwacha, and then they go back a week or two later, they find that it's been increased, and it's like that for some of the essential commodities. But then I must say also for those that are doing business, especially importing, the dollar exchange rate has gone down, not just for the dollar, but generally the exchange rate has gone down. So that has seen a significant relief for those that are engaging in importing products. And the effects have been passed on to the consumer with cheaper goods. But generally, the cost of living still remains high, as Dr. Mungole initially indicated, because about 60% of the population still lives in poverty. But also I must mention that there's been easing of the load shedding or power rationing this year, and lots of rain. So at least there is some kind of relief for most citizens. It's better than last year, actually.
That's interesting to know. Usually when...
Meanwhile, USISRO on Iran. Iran expands attack on the Gulf despite Trump's threats.
Well, let's speak further about the U.S.-Israel war on Iran. Bring in Tembi Safakude, Senior Research Fellow and Director at AFRISID, and Brooke Spector, International Relations Expert. Gentlemen, my thanks to you both, and thank you for your patience as well, as we've been waiting to come to you this afternoon. And as we come to air, Tembi, if I can start with you. We're seeing here some breaking news lines about U.S.-Israeli forces attacking a petrochemical complex in the south of Iran, and I wonder if that should be read as perhaps a warning shot from the United States and Israel for Iran, given that Trump deadline to basically reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face destruction by Tuesday.
Yes, the South Pass gas field, this is the installation that Donald Trump warned Israel not to attack. If you remember, these were attacked some couple of days ago, and it led to an escalation, and Donald Trump vowed that that was not going to happen again, but we're seeing it happening again. You can give two interpretations on this event. One is typical Israel that always want to sabotage whenever there is a possibility of a ceasefire or negotiated settlement, whether it's in Gaza, in or in Iran, they always try and sabotage that. But at the same time, they might just be taking advantage of what Trump has said yesterday in that very vulgar statement that was issued by Donald Trump through his Truth Social posting, that he was going to go on to attack and gave Iran 48 hours. Of course, we're now 12 hours away from that deadline. So probably Israel taking advantage of that, wanting to impact as much damage as they can, because they do anticipate that this might just be the end of the war if Donald Trump does reach a deal with Iran. But I'm of the view that this is typical Israel action, that whenever there is a possibility of a negotiated settlement between whoever it is in the Middle East and the United States, they'll try and sabotage it. And this is clearly an act of sabotage, because Donald Trump has said in the past that he had warned Israel not to go ahead and target the gas and oil fields of Iran.
Brooks, let me ask you then about this latest Trump deadline where he said to the Iranians, open the Strait of Hormuz entirely or face destruction by Tuesday, late Tuesday. I think this is US time. It'll be late our time. How real do you think this latest deadline is? Because they do appear to be ever shifting, according to Trump. But also, to Tembisa's point, to what extent are the United States and Israel walking in step in terms of what happens and coordination during this war? Who is calling the shots?
Okay, let's take, there are lots of questions there. How many hours do we have to analyze all this?
10 minutes, I'm afraid.
Could be a little hard. All right, let's take the second half of your question first. Part of the problem in understanding what's going on is the need to realize that the Israelis and the Americans, although they are engaging in a similar pattern, they are not working totally hand in hand in tandem. The particular attack that you referenced at the beginning wasn't an American one, that was an Israeli one. The difficulty is in trying to unravel which activities are agreed upon activities versus which are individual activities. But then go back to the first question, which is, what do we do with Donald Trump's intemperate, obscene message? Part of me says that this really is simply one new manifestation of a very old pattern with Donald Trump that goes right back to his days as a real estate investor and a property developer, which is you push as hard as you can, you issue threats, you promise dire consequences unless the other party agrees to what you want sufficiently that you can call off the dogs. And in this case, there have been, I think I'm right, there have been four separate versions of there is a deadline beyond which we will then unleash the dogs of war, or whatever metaphor he chose to use. But that's happened four times. This is the newest version. As you say, tomorrow evening, Washington time. My suspicion, and this is just a guess because I don't have official sources, but a close reading of what I have been following and watching, is that the process of a two-party negotiation at a distance by way of an intermediary, the Pakistanis in this case, is beginning to have some sort of positive movement. Not full, not complete, and certainly not the issuance of a general ceasefire and an agreement to shake hands and move on from the state of hostilities. But if we are just a little bit lucky, you will see Donald Trump say, well, there's been sufficient progress that maybe we can move forward, and I will set another deadline a week from now or something to that effect. But this is typical Donald Trump behavior. And what surprises me in a way is that people are astonished by it at this point, because there's a 40-year track record of seeing this kind of thing happen. None of that says that there will not be further exchange of rockets or missiles. None of it says that there will not be other facilities, whether they're civilian in the Gulf Arab states or whether it'll be U.S. facilities in those areas, or whether it'll be civilian spaces in Israel or infrastructure in Iran. None of that will happen. But I'm beginning to be ever so slightly optimistic, from right. the depths of depression to slight optimism, that it's just possible that we'll see some forward progress, thanks to the energies and efforts of the Pakistanis.
Brooks, if you can hear me now, I suppose the question becomes whether Trump is still in charge of this war and its consequences when you look at the ever-changing deadlines that he set for Iran to bow and accept some sort of defeat, when you look at the fact that the Iranians have themselves said, well, they simply don't trust Washington and are not willing to negotiate while staring down the barrel of a gun. And then you've got Israel, which is supposed to be an ally of the United States, also taking actions that Washington has not pre-approved or been made aware of before they happen, or that are even contrary to where the U.S. wants to take the war at a particular time.
One of the things that's being left out in our conversation so far between you, me, and Tembisa is the domestic issues within the United States. It's quite clear that Donald Trump's administration is now increasingly panicked over the way this particular conflict spun out of their control. It did not go according to whatever plan they had in mind. The price for petrol in the U.S. has broached a figure which hasn't been seen for at least half a decade, and that has many people in the country really unhappy.
Meanwhile, new on this war of clearly this ongoing war, Trump threatens that Iran can be taken out in one night, and that it may be tomorrow night, Mr. Gallis.
Donald Trump says America is ready to destroy every Iranian bridge and power plant by midnight tomorrow if no deal is reached with the regime to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Now, he suggested the destruction would only take 4 hours if there's no agreement that was acceptable to him. His comments came during a news conference where he celebrated what he called the very historic rescue of a U.S. serviceman whose fighter jet came down over Iran last week. Sarah Smith was at the news conference at the White House and has sent us this report.
President Trump was enjoying the traditional Easter festivities at the White House today. As the clock is ticking on the imminent deadline he has set for Iran to agree a deal. It is an unlikely sight. The commander-in-chief with the First Lady and the Easter Bunny as he celebrated the rescue of an American airman downed inside Iran.
And what about the rescue that took place yesterday? What about
that? That dramatic rescue prompted the president to make a rare appearance in the White House press room to share the good news and repeat his threat to Iran.
The entire country could be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night. They're going to have no bridges. They're going to have no power plants. Stone ages, yeah. Stone ages.
He has delivered many contradictory messages about the conflict, saying both that the war will soon be over and that he will escalate his attacks.
Are you winding this down?
Can't tell you.
Are you escalating?
I can't tell you. I don't know. I can't tell. It depends what they do. This is a critical period.
This key bridge just outside Tehran was destroyed by American bombs last week. Deliberately targeting civilian infrastructure, like bridges and power plants, could constitute a war crime and would punish innocent Iranian people.
They would be willing to suffer that in order to have freedom. The Iranians have, and we've had numerous intercepts. Please keep bombing. Bombs that are dropping near their homes.
That is not what people inside Iran told BBC Persian.
I think more and more people in Iran have realized that Trump doesn't care about them at all. I hate him from the bottom of my heart and those who support him too.
It feels like we're sinking deeper and deeper into a swamp. What can we do as ordinary people? We can't stop him.
I don't see a bright future for Iranians at the end of this. With all these attacks, Iran won't be a place we can live in anymore.
Negotiations between the U.S. and Iran are taking place, said President Trump. He is demanding a deal that includes the reopening of international shipping lanes in the Straits of Hormuz.
I can tell you that we have an active willing participant on the other side. They would like to be able to make a deal. I can't say any more than that. But like
as talks take place inside Iran, the bombing continues. And the U.S. says it will intensify as the latest deadline approaches.
There are now 27 hours to go until Donald Trump's latest deadline, after which he says it could take just 4 hours for the U.S. to destroy most of Iran's infrastructure tomorrow night. Now, it is worth saying that over the course of the 5 weeks so far of this conflict, other deadlines set by Donald Trump have come and gone, with him threatening to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age and then at the last minute extending his time frame. Listening to him in the briefing room today, it was clear that one thing has not changed, and that is his anger towards NATO and particularly the United Kingdom for not offering him more support in his attacks on Iran in this conflict.
Sarah, thank you.
The entire country could be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night.
Speaking to reporters in the White House briefing room, U.S. President Donald Trump repeated his threat to Iran: make a deal and open the Strait of Hormuz or face consequences.
We're giving them till tomorrow, 8 o'clock Eastern time, and after that, they're going to have no bridges, they're going to have no power plants. Stone Ages, yeah.
Downplaying he was committing war crimes by targeting civilian energy and infrastructure, Trump told reporters the military destruction will be immediate.
Every bridge in Iran will be decimated by 12 o'clock tomorrow night. We don't want that to happen.
Trump spoke following a dramatic weekend rescue of an F-15E airman shot down Friday over Iran. Trump, along with his defense secretary and the director of the CIA, detailed how the weapons systems officer evaded capture for almost 2 days, despite serious injury.
Despite the peril, the officer followed his training and climbed into the treacherous mountain terrain and started climbing toward a higher altitude.
Pictures on social media show the two charged C-130 planes the U.S. left behind, stuck in the mud, nearly hampering the rescue.
Per the president's direction, today will
the defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, on Monday warned Iran in advance of the U.S. deadline to open the strait, while diplomacy through intermediaries is ongoing, U.S. strikes in Iran will continue.
Tomorrow, even more than today. And then Iran has a choice. Choose wisely, because this president does not play around.
U.S. President Donald Trump told reporters on Monday that he believes Iran is negotiating in good faith and submitted what he calls a significant proposal to end the conflict that, in his view, is still not good enough. Kimberly Helkett, Al Jazeera, The White House.
Tehran hit by the U.S.-Israeli strikes as Iran warns of retaliation and fears growth of wider attacks.
So there have been a number of strikes overnight yet again in Tehran and Iran in general. Please give us the latest.
Yes, actually, we witnessed a number of blasts and explosions taking place across the Iranian capital in the eastern and western parts, and obviously that is indicative of the continuation of the campaign of air strikes by the Americans and Israelis. So far, we know that a Mehrabad airport located inside the capital witnessed overnight heavy bombardment in the areas in the vicinity of that. Also, attacks are reported, but the domain is not limited to the capital, as it goes well beyond it to include other cities such as Shiraz, Isfahan, Qazvin, and many others, and in some of which fatalities are reported, and residential areas are said to be targeted as well. We are dealing with an escalated situation for basically two reasons. First, this is the threatening language that is coming from the U.S. President Donald Trump, about more attacks targeting the infrastructure of the country, power plants in particular. And second, over the past 1 or 2 weeks now, I can say we have been witnessing an increased nature of attacks on the infrastructure of the country already. And we know that, for example, in the past 24 hours, we've got reports from these different petrochemical, let's say, sites and units being targeted. Prior to that, we know that other infrastructural places, such as many hospitals, schools, over 30 universities, the latest of which was Sharif University of Technology, and many other infrastructural important places, such as a bridge that was targeted the other day, are experiencing this ongoing campaign of airstrikes, now not targeting just the military headquarters or state-related buildings, but the very civilian units, and that is obviously putting impact on the ordinary citizens here in Iran.
Now, Tohid, I want to ask you about this warning from Israel now for Iranians to stay away from railway lines and trains, saying that their presence near both of those things endangers their lives. What can you tell us about this?
This is not the first time that Iranians are facing such threats, as specifically we had from the U.S. President Donald Trump about the deadline. And obviously, it's just like dancing with the same old tune, but it doesn't mean at all that Iranians are not going to take it seriously, because these threatening language time and again have been translated into real acts of targeting, you know. We've got it previously from the Israeli side sending warning messages, and then in later hours we witnessed the attacks on the alarm territories. So that means obviously it's going to be a chaotic situation if train stations or other infrastructural transportation infrastructure specifically is going to be targeted. But still, there is this rhetoric coming from the Iranian side. Again, this is not the first time, and we hear it from time to time from specifically the spokesperson for the military headquarters of the country coming out to talk about strongest retaliation. And this, over the past, I would say, 2-3 days, has been strengthened, and they're saying that this retaliatory strategy is going to be coming with a widespread, devastating retaliatory strikes if the other sides decide to attack the civilian infrastructure of the country.
Tohid Asadi reporting live for us from Tehran. Tohid, thank you.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program, brought to you by Loisa Shimi, and thereafter the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off at 16:30. Don't forget the Business Economic Segment Show with David Shombe kicks off at 1800 hours. Now from Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo, ihewe tike kovano hile koshuwa.
270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.